I'd like you to welcome Abigail Doner. She has received a master's degree in population and international health from Harvard University School of Public Health in June 2008. Congratulations. And she's currently working for the Harvard Center for Population and Development Studies. Abigail's areas of interest are operations research and survey design and management. Let's welcome Abigail.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So I'm going to tell you about a project that I did in Ghana in the summer of 2007, looking at the challenges that providers face in adhering to quality of care standards. Before I get going, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Richard Killian, who's here today all the way from Ghana, as well as Carrie Bruce, who couldn't be here today, for their invaluable assistance with the project. And I want to let you know that I have copies of my slides as well as the survey that we'll be discussing today at the back of the room. You're welcome to pick up one now or at the conclusion of the presentations. So I have no financial relationships to disclose. So dozens of evidence-based standards have been developed for use in Ghana as well as in other countries. This has been lauded as a successful way to bring global best practices and evidence-based medicine into the field, into underserved areas. Unfortunately, as we all know, the realities of what happens on the ground. Oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you for letting me know. Is this better? Okay. So the realities of what happens on the ground might differ significantly from the way that care is envisioned by providers and planners in the capital city. And so for my project with Quality Health Partners, a bilateral project in Ghana, we wanted to look at reproductive and child health providers and their challenges that they face when they try to adhere to the quality of care standards that have been sent out for them. So the immediate goal of the project was to describe the barriers that reproductive and child health care providers face with a long-term goal of improving the way that standards are implemented in Ghana and ultimately increasing the quality of care available to Ghanaians. So we talked a little bit about standards and guidelines, but just to clarify exactly where I'm going with this, these are national standards that are based typically on international best practices. A few examples are infection prevention. Here's a midwife washing her hands before she does a procedure. The provision of oral rehydration therapy in health centers while children are waiting to be seen. And the use of insecticide-treated bed nets. Here a midwife is showing us her postpartum ward where all of the beds are covered in nets. So my project was mixed methods. First I'm going to tell you a little bit about the quantitative portion of the project, and then we'll talk about the qualitative portion. The quantitative portion is a self-administered questionnaire. You'll see it at the back of your handout, a four-page long survey that's mostly checkboxes, Likert scales. I had 585 providers respond to the survey, so a 77% response rate across 200 facilities. The facilities were facilities where Quality Health Partners already had working relationships in southern and central Ghana. So it was not designed to be a nationally representative survey, but rather to give a broad perspective on what's happening in southern and central Ghana and overall sort of where do providers stand in terms of how clear are standards across different service areas, what barriers do they see, which do they perceive as the most severe. Do they have access to copies of printed materials? I asked about five different manuals. And then I asked a little bit of demographic information with the goal of stratifying some of the results across regions or across provider types or trying to get some more information about where are problems most acute or where do the problems differ by provider type. So in the summer of 2007, when I arrived in Ghana, we did a pretest of the survey in three facilities, and then based on the results of that, rolled out the survey across the 200 facilities. Just a quick look at who the respondents were. You can see that they were overwhelmingly nurses and midwives with a few physicians and medical assistants. We did oversample physicians and medical assistants. Unfortunately, there are fewer of them in the country, and fewer of them responded. And now to talk about the qualitative portion of the project. Simultaneously with the survey rollout, I conducted 15 key informant interviews. I selected a group of people who represented facility, district, regional, and national level responsibilities. These were typically clinicians who also had administrative duties. I was lucky enough to be able to use Quality Health Partners' existing working relationships to begin my sample and then snowballed out from there. We talked for anywhere between 30 minutes and an hour and a half in English about what's working well, what challenges these folks see in the system, and specifically around standards and guidelines in reproductive and child health care domains, what recommendations they would make if they were in charge, what opportunities they see for improvement, and sort of how they understand the way that standards implementation is happening in Ghana. And what I really wanted to do was to complement the breadth of data that I was getting with the quantitative portion with some depth here to try and flesh out the kinds of discrete data points that I would get from the survey with a contextual understanding of what's happening in the system. Now I'm going to tell you a little bit about my results. I'd be happy to talk more after the presentation since this is a short time. First the quantitative portion, then the qualitative portion. I found overwhelmingly high support for standards. 96% agreed that standards help me provide the best possible care. So in Ghana, at least among these providers, it seems that it's a very widely accepted notion that there can be a protocol and providers would be expected to follow that protocol as they interact with patients. 92% agreed that standards can be easily understood. So that's great news. We can't have a successful standards system if no one understands what the standards are. So that seems like a good result. However, compliance is low, at least this isn't exactly self-reported. I thought I would get a better result if I asked about providers in general rather than a self-assessment of compliance with standards. So providers generally follow standards. 51% agreed. So despite the fact that people accept standards as a ground map for the way that care is provided and they feel that they're clear, they perceive remaining challenges. Less than half of providers had copies for 4 of the 5 manuals that I asked about. So that seems like a very clear, concrete issue. If you don't have copies to, say, the IMCI flip chart booklet, how can you correctly follow the complicated IMCI protocol? Of the 10 barriers that I asked about, here are the top three. You can see that for each of these, between 60 and 80% of providers thought that this was at least sometimes a problem. Again, lacking copies of standards came right up to the top. Lacking skills and training to implement standards, and feeling able to care for patients without referring to standards. And now to talk a little bit about the qualitative results. It was fascinating to speak with people. They described a complex web of problems that exist at the provider level, at the facility level, and at the overall, the context of poverty and a financially strapped health system. Over and over again, I heard about a desire for more training, that people were not getting trained enough, that the system which rotates civil servants sometimes faster than they're trained results in people being trained twice or missing a training and then they don't get trained at all. I heard a lot of requests for more interactive training, training that would involve more follow-up to make sure that the behavior change is happening on site, or if people have questions once they go back to their work site from the training, that they get the opportunity to really practice and then get some more follow-up from supervisors or trainers. And then people talked a lot about the financial constraints in the system. In Ghana, there's a relatively new national health insurance scheme, so there's many more patients coming into the system. Simultaneously with that, there's a slight shift in the way that reimbursement is happening, and facilities are more dependent on what are known as internally generated funds to purchase their supplies, and that's really creating a problem as individual facilities need to turn around their reimbursement fast enough to be able to keep up with the demands for consumables. And then, you know, this is largely a public health system where I was doing the survey, but there are many other providers of health services in the country, including pharmacies, traditional healers, private providers, and patients do not remain exclusively in the public health system. And it's very hard to apply these standards to these other providers. You know, asking traditional healers to provide first-line malaria treatment is consistent with the way that the public health system is going to do it. It just seems overwhelmingly challenging. So I'd like to tell you a few of my recommendations, and in the short term, some simpler things that could be done, like distributing more copies of the manuals, planning trainings in a more interactive format, and with funding for the fuel and vehicle maintenance that would allow supervisors to go back into the field and do follow-up. And then in the long term, a lot of the solutions need to be multi-sectoral, like increasing the human and financial resources available to the system, things like improving the telecommunications infrastructure to more rapidly distribute information. One of the examples of this, when I was there in the summer of 2007, there was information about the way that uterotonic should be handled, which is in refrigeration, that had come out in 2006, and we went to facility after facility, and unfortunately these drugs weren't being refrigerated, and it just seemed like the message wasn't getting out. And you can imagine that a system that had access to more reliable postal mail or, you know, ultimately something like internet access would really allow the information to be disseminated more rapidly and more consistently. A few lessons learned from the project. I was pleased that the quantitative and the qualitative results largely agreed with each other. I think that sort of strengthens the position of each portion of the project. Ideally, I would have done the qualitative portion first and then used that to finesse the design of the quantitative portion. For logistics reasons, that wasn't possible. The high response rate, I think, speaks to the feasibility of this method of querying providers about their opinions, and suggests that this could be done for other projects in the future. The providers were really quite happy to participate. We only offered them a sticker as thank you, and still we got just plenty of responses coming back in. And then finally, the challenge to disseminate findings. Obviously, today's presentation works on that, but in the context of many projects going on, the financially strapped Ministry of Health, changes in what's going on with USAID, you know, it's important that information that's collected then be distributed and used to best promote health, which is the ultimate goal of the project. In closing, I'd like to thank all of my supporters, particularly Quality Health Partners who hosted me in Ghana. And now I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have. And I'd like to let you know that if you think of questions later on, I'd be really happy to speak with you via email. So thank you very much. Yes, sir.
I'm Gustav from Plan USA.
Pleasure to meet you.
For example, they do supervision visits and then they audit clinical records to see whether the standards are being enforced.
To my knowledge, sorry, let me repeat the question, whether or not the Ministry of Health has a mechanism to check whether or not standards are being enforced. And to my knowledge, there is not systematic. But let me have Richard contribute to that.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to welcome